Hi, this is Daniel Garber, the Movies, for CulturalMining.com and CIUT 89.5 FM. It may be cold outside, but things are burning up on the big screen. This week, I'm looking at two new movies, a thriller horror and a documentary. There are Wolfmen in Oregon and Assassins in Congo. Wolfman, co-written and directed by Lee Whannell. It's present-day San Francisco. Blake, played by Christopher Abbott, is a lapsed writer who devotes his life to his wife and daughter. Charlotte, played by Julie Garner, is a careerist who is rarely at home, so Blake takes on the parenting role. He spends all his time with her precocious 10-year-old daughter, Ginger, played by Matilda Firth. But he and Charlotte are constantly bickering about her absentee mom-ism. So when a package arrives with his late father's will and a set of keys in it, he wonders if this is the sign, if this is the miracle they need to keep the family together. He's inherited a house, a barn, and countless acres of lush green forest, the beautiful country he grew up in. Blake suggests the three of them go on a road trip together for some quality time. Young Blake was raised in isolation by a hard-ass survivalist who was strict and demanding towards his motherless son. That's why Blake is so indulgent towards Ginger, who still dresses like a Disney princess at age 10. So off they head for his isolated cabin in a remote part of Oregon. But what Blake seems to have forgotten is there are wolves in them thar hills. Big, bad wolves. Mean, ugly wolves. The kind that stand on 2 feet and like wolfing down people like them. And sure enough, as they approach their farm, one of them wolfies drives their U-Haul off the road and they're forced to run for their lives. Luckily, the house he grew up in is still wolf-proof, with iron bars on all the windows. Unluckily, Blake gets himself slashed by the Wolfman, and he's changing into something different. Can he keep his vulpine urges in check and protect his family from harm? Or will he be the biggest danger to them of all? Wolfman is a cabin in the woods werewolf movie with a few new twists. In this version, people don't turn into wolves in a full moon and then change back again. They're in it for the long haul. And these werewolves aren't sleek or sexy or funny, never mind cute or lovable. Sorry, that's furry, not funny. They're more like zombies infected with a horrible virus that makes their teeth and hair fall out and their skin go all bumpy and gross. These werewolves want to eat flesh and blood, preferably human. Once infected, they can no longer speak or understand regular people. And there's no sex in this movie, not even a kiss. It's totally sterile, though quite bloody. In this neck of the woods, everyone's a guy with literally no women at all, and any man might turn into a werewolf when you least expect it. Women and girls are urban sophisticates, while men and boys are potential redneck killers. Get it? Christopher Abbott plays Blake as a male Oprah mom who is inevitably drawn back to the dangerous manliness he grew up with. Julia Garner's Charlotte is a less developed character, just an aloof woman forced to either scream and run or fight back. There are a lot of misfires in this movie. Charlotte dresses in what looks like an English barrister emerging from a courtroom in black and white, but it turns out she's a journalist leaving her newsroom. Huh? Blake, who grew up in a world of misery and depth that he has long left far behind, now decides to take his family there for vacation? Why? But there are some good parts too, like when the story is told through the werewolf's eyes and ears, we can hear the pounding footsteps of a tiny insect on the wall and see the world as a glowing, colorful prism. Very cool. But not cool enough to save a story that doesn't quite cut it. Soundtrack to a Coup d'Etat, co-written and directed by Johann Grimonprez. It's June 30th, 1960, and the Democratic Republic of Congo, as a free democratic state, is born after nearly a century of brutal colonial rule under the King of Belgium. Leopold II was notorious for chopping off the hands of men, women, and children who didn't produce their quota of rubber. Congo, under the Union Minière, a corporation, is a very rich country full of diamonds, copper, tin, and uranium extracted and shipped to Europe and the U.S. Its rubber and copper were crucial to winning the two world wars, and their uranium is what fueled the atomic bombs dropped on Japan. Its first elected prime minister, Patrice Lumumba, gives a speech on Independence Day celebrating the transfer of power from the previous colonial rulers to an independent state. He rightly condemns the colonial atrocities and speaks out in favor of the non-aligned nations, the former colonies in Europe and Asia. So while his speech is well received locally, Europeans, including the Belgian royal family, are shocked and aghast. Does this mean they'll lose control of the Union Minière, and will the U.S. give up its main source of uranium? Not a chance. They accuse Lumumba of being a communist, despite his stressing independence and nationalism, so they declare Katanga, an area rich in minerals but part of that country, as independent from the DRC. This seceded state is essentially ruled by white Europeans and Rhodesian mercenary police and military who operate with impunity, kidnapping miners and bombing uncooperative villages. The U.S., particularly the CIA, fearing the so-called communist Lumumba, launch a two-pronged campaign. Covert one involving assassinations, bombing, kidnapping, and regime change. And a diplomatic one where famous American jazz musicians are flown to independent African states to perform as ambassadors of jazz. We're talking Louis Armstrong, Dizzy Gillespie, Nina Simone, and Max Roach, none of whom have any idea they are working for a CIA front. By January 1961, the wildly popular Lumumba is dead, assassinated in Katanga with Belgian and American complicity. Soundtrack of a Coup d'Etat is a fantastic documentary that retells the events of those 6 months. Now, the doc is 2.5 hours long, so I can only give you the briefest outline of what it's about, but the film itself is amazing, covering everything from Pan-African nationalism and the Cold War to non-aligned nations, colonialism, and the UN. We hear Malcolm X in Harlem, André Blouin on women's rights in Africa, Castro in New York, and Nikita Khrushchev's famous shoe speech, where apparently he didn't actually say what they said he said, in the General Assembly. It's filled with compelling imagery. Alan Dulles, the head of the CIA, smoking his pipe. A North Rhodesian mercenary recounting the tens of thousands of people they killed with impunity, the Soviets crushing Hungary, and Voice of America's broadcast. There's a hilarious propaganda newsreel with the U.S. parachuting plastic record players and vinyl discs across the Iron Curtain. I wonder if that was real. And through it all, jazz music from America to Africa. The film is made of excerpts from previously made documentaries combined with non-stop black and white footage. Most cuts are only about 2 to 3 seconds long, giving the whole film the feeling of a glorious collage of African history, similar to the films of Adam Curtis, but without his style of spoken narration. Many of the subtitles are large fonts superimposed on photos in blues, yellows, and pinks, just like the cover of a Blue Note jazz album. A crucial historical document and a work of art, Johann Grimonprez's soundtrack to a coup d'etat is a must-see. Soundtrack to a coup d'etat and Wolfman both open this weekend in Toronto. Check our local listings. This is Daniel Garb of the Movies each Saturday morning on CIUT 89.5 FM and on my website, culturalmining.com.